for almost 4 years. And by playing, I mean like actually like building functional experiences for clients. But they were always limited by the user interface, right? Okay. Like you have to like click things with your fingers and like.
Are we going Vision Pro here? Is that?
We could go Vision Pro. Okay.
Do we need to get a couple and come in and do a pod?
I mean, I think Claire's gonna buy them, but yeah.
So thanks, Claire.
Awesome. Really generous.
Best producer ever.
Welcome everyone to Tech by Design, where the Richmond Technology Council takes you to the edge for trending tech and innovation here in Richmond, Virginia. I'm Nick Surface, CEO of RVA Tech, along with Alex Atanias, CEO of Shaco. Come join us.
All right. Well, after quite the hiatus, we are back in action. It's good to see everyone. I think we all had a busy and fun March, I hope. We're here, the pollen's here, and we wanted to kick it off. Nick, I wanted to ask you how the Data Summit went.
Yeah, the Data Summit just happened, gosh, 2 weeks ago now. So it's finally in the rearview mirror, but it was the biggest Data Summit we've had in its, I think, 5 or 6 year existence. Started that thing back in 2019, and it has just continued to grow. And, you know, certainly the pandemic was a little bit of a blip, but people are back, and it's that's the first thing that's just great to see, that our community is, you know, in full force again. But speaking of communities, the data and AI community is just exploding and thriving, and not only is it growing, but it's expanding in its like diversity of angles and tracks and specialties and perspectives and the way people are coming at it. We had 7 tracks of content for this thing, which just speaks to, again, the diversity and broad brush aspects of data and AI in today's world. We had a whole bunch of really cool sessions. Just to give the audience kind of a flavor of what we heard, we had something on AI bias by a guy named Ankit Vermani, trying to show how AI can be, you know, fair and trustworthy and how you can evaluate its trustworthiness. We talked about using data smartly. Talked about data science careers, which is now blowing up. I don't know how many folks know, but UVA now has a school of data science exclusively on campus up in Charlottesville. There's innovation from problems, AI and data engineering, AI adoption insights, AI and creativity. We had a really unique, kind of fascinating presentation from a guy named Nick Agliano about fantasy writing and how to incorporate AI into that. And that brings me to my kind of final point, is that everybody's out here trying to learn about AI and trying to figure out how to educate ourselves and be abreast of the latest AI capabilities. But I always tell people, I don't know how you feel, Alex, but the best way to learn AI is just to start applying it to as many different jobs and tasks and projects as you can, so that you get to the end of maybe the next year and you've used it for 16 very different things, from a grocery list to an accounting project to a design project. And then you'll really know the capacity and capability of AI once you've expanded what you've used it with and on.
I have so many questions about the Data Summit. I wasn't able to attend, but I've heard so many great things about it. I think from an AI perspective, one of the things that I've been talking to a lot of people about on a daily basis, it's interact with AI like you do with a person. What I have seen so many times from so many different people is they have a 2-line prompt and expect magic. And it's kind of like a first-time manager, right? Like you have a request that's half-baked and then you expect somebody to actually follow through, right? And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing. The other thing that I think, we'll talk about this we'll talk about this next, Google next.
Well, Alex, let's stop. That's a fascinating perspective. I've actually never heard it that way. But from a management take, you know, a lot of times we work with employees or new employees and we tell them what we want to happen, and we get back something completely different than we expect. Yeah. And we wonder why. And we say, why, this employee is not performing properly or up to speed or whatever it is. And then you take a step back and somebody asks you, well, what did you tell them? Mm-hmm. And you realize, oh, maybe I didn't give them the right prompts or the right explanation. And the same thing with AI. So I hadn't heard that take before, but it's interesting to take such a humanistic perspective on arguably the world's, most advanced technology right now.
I mean, if you think about what AI is it's essentially a computer program that sits on top of our entire database of language. So all it's doing is processing the way we're processing.
So would you say soft skills or technical skills are more important to amplifying AI or using AI?
I mean, I don't think you could divide it. I think we have to, it's both. Right, because if you don't have the tech skills, you're not going to build a program. But if you don't have the soft skills to interact with it, then you can't relate with the program. So two different aspects to it. During the data summit, I was actually at a customer experience summit. And one of the biggest challenges is the output that AI gives you isn't necessarily correct, both from a soft skill perspective and from a real perspective. I think we were talking to a hiring manager or human resource manager, and she prompted AI on whether a person should be fired based on specific activities that this person committed. And the system said, yes, because he is blank, fill in the blank. And it was completely wrong, right? And so, I mean, first of all, why would you ask AI if somebody should be fired? Like,
you know what? That was my first thought too. And then I almost self-corrected myself. And I almost wondered if it actually provides a CYA kind of liability opportunity for people to be able to say, oh, I didn't make this decision. AI made it. So it's a scientific algorithmic decision that was made. So don't blame me. Don't sue me because, you know, a formula made it.
I think there's actually, it's finalized already, but there was a lawsuit up in Canada. I think it was with, what's the Canadian Airlines? Canada Airlines, I think. So somebody's parents or uncle had passed away. It basically had this person chatted with the airline. The airline was using AI, and he's like, hey, what's your bereavement policy? And like the AI system said, book your ticket, send us your receipt, and we'll pay you back, right? Right? And so he booked his ticket. It was like a $500 ticket. He went to like the funeral, blah, 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 came back. And Canada is like, hey, listen, it's not our fault. The AI got it wrong. We're not going to pay you. Yeah. And so the judge obviously ruled in the plaintiff's favor because they're like, you put this technology out. You can't hide behind it.
Yeah. So now we're creating a whole book of law around these precedents too, which is another element of our world and our lives that is being affected by AI that, you know, is beyond tech.
Yeah. I want to talk a little more about this, but what were the highlights? Like, what were the five big takeaways from the data summit?
Five big takeaways from the data summit. I'm going to rehash my primary point. The biggest takeaway is the diversity of AI as a topic now. It's not just one particular thing. It's not one particular tool. It's not one particular application. There are multiple tools, multiple applications, multiple ways of thinking about it. I mean, we just highlighted that talking about liability and law versus customer service versus processing, you know, formulas. Yeah, so that's my first big takeaway. The second is its ability to amplify creativity. And I think there's a big worry that AI is going to be the creator or take away creativity. And like anything, it's a tool that is going to get us off the blank page. And now we're seeing more creative starts to projects, whether it's graphics or video or even just copywriting. Creators are getting a better start to their project, which allows them to then apply and layer in their own critical thinking and creativity upon it. And I think it just getting past that blank page is a big step. And the ability for AI to increase our creativity has continued to compound literally week over week. I want to say year over year, but this thing is moving so fast. And that's point number three. A year ago, this thing was still called the Data Summit. And we were just about data. And yeah, AI was a piece and a part. And there was ChatGPT had just come out. Or not just come out, but it was starting to be adopted, I should say, you know, on a more democratic basis. And we've gone from, I think last year in March, talking about ChatGPT and, oh, it's this cool thing that generates all this content, to an entire conference with almost 600 people and seven tracks diving deep into how AI can be used in a variety of practical applications. And so we're beyond just, oh, it's a cool niche, you know, tool or toy or the next hot thing, to no, there's legitimate application to daily life, to personal, to business, to leisure. Literally, whatever you're doing, there's a potential way that AI can improve and enhance your experience. And so those are my three big takeaways. There's a lot of technical stuff that we went through at the event. I mean, we talked heavy machine learning, we talked heavy AI bias, we talked code, we talked strategy. I think we even talked about the NFL draft and how they're using it. And we got deep into the weeds. So if you're out there looking at this for next year, you know, please keep it on your radar as a conference for 2025.
Is there somewhere somebody could access recordings or notes on that? Or are you guys going to post?
We're going to post the PDFs of the presentations from the speakers, but we don't record. No.
Okay.
Well, I'm kind of building on that. The Google Cloud Next is happening right now, and they're digging a lot into AI and Gemini and what's next on the Google AI space. And we can talk more about this next week when the conference wraps. Alex, I didn't know if you had any thoughts on what you've seen so far out of it.
I think Next is really interesting because Sundar basically said at this point last fall, I'm sorry, at this point last spring or summer, we were essentially just kind of starting to contemplate what's happening with AI. And fast forward 9 months later, 10 months later, and we're essentially like transforming new businesses. I've not only seen this, but I've experienced it in action with our team at Shaco. So many companies are basically struggling to keep up with the speed of evolution that this system's going through. So the second you have something up and running that is ready to scale, 600 other companies have already done it, and they're on to the next phase of AI. So I think that's going to be really interesting, is just like how this industry transforms, this industry meaning like the tech industry that supports every other industry. The second thing I'm curious about is Gemini just didn't get it right out the door. They've had a lot of mistakes. I'm not going to talk about them, but they're relatively public. Google's going to get it right. Like, they're definitely going to get it right. They have basically managed all the data of the world. So I think if nothing else, they're ahead of everything. The second thing that I really like that Google's doing is partnering with several different companies to actually get access to the data to train their models. And I think that's going to increase the speed at which they get it right. I'm curious to see what Gemini does with Code Assist. I'm curious to see what they do with Cloud Assist for developer tools. I'm also curious to see how objective Gemini can become. I think a lot of responses from Gemini's public-facing kind of interface were relatively subjective in terms of some of the answers they were giving. So I'm hoping that Google shifts more to objectivity versus just kind of relativity. And I'm talking about some of the, I don't know if you've Googled what Gemini did, but it's been interesting.
Outside of OpenAI, when you look at some of the big five, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Apple, I forget what the other one is. But when you look
Microsoft.
Microsoft, yeah. At how they're all positioned, it seems like AI is now going to allow all of them to become even bigger juggernauts in their own spaces, because it's all based on data, and they are the aggregators, the biggest aggregators of data in their space. So when you think about e-commerce, you got to think Amazon's going to rule the roost. And when you think about search and I guess the internet, you got to think Google has so much data that they're going to continue to be the preeminent search engine internet dominator. When I think about why this is even happening right now, like, what is it about now that is causing this evolution? And somebody mentioned that the pandemic caused all of us to get online and create so many transactions and so much more content online than ever before, that there's now been this flood of data and activity that is informing and iterating the AI. So the AI just has so much online data than it's ever had, and it's getting it faster than ever. And now that every business is creating an online transactional platform, the data just continues to be exponential. So it's going to get better and better, and I think that's why. And that I also see Google getting better, and I see Amazon getting better at what they do. Or do you think there's going to be a new player? Do you think somebody else is going to come in?
I mean, there's OpenAI right now, right? Like, I think, what was it? They were trying to raise $7 trillion, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. They may be the next of the big, they may be the big six.
Yeah.
Well, and Alex, you had flagged Anthropic for us as well as something that Amazon's invested in. That feels kind of in that similar vein of Microsoft and OpenAI, or is that different?
Yeah, I think you have Google with Gemini, Amazon with Anthropic, and Microsoft with OpenAI, Amazon with Anthropic, and then Google with Gemini, right? So we're waiting to see what Apple does. I think Apple also just is, there's been some rumors about the Gemini Apple phone right now. So there might be some partnerships. I think there's already a massive partnership between Apple and Google on search and whatnot. I wonder if AI is the next big thing. I don't know if that's going to be a mistake or not, but we'll see. I want to get back to Nick's point on the these players getting bigger, right? So because of our current legal system, all these massive companies are starting to, it is harder for them to acquire companies, and companies that are the right size, and they're sitting on a lot of cash. And so what you're starting to see is they're investing in data, they're investing in the infrastructure, and they're starting to scale because they know that, I mean, they have so much cash at their disposal that is where the next space is. A lot of these new startups are essentially going to have to build on their data sets, build on their infrastructure. And so, oh, and we forgot Meta, by the way, right? So Meta and Llama.
That's the one I missed.
There you go.
I said Microsoft.
All these companies are can't invest in large enough companies for legal reasons. So now they're investing in infrastructure, they're investing in data, they're investing in speed. And so all that means is 5-6 years from now, 10 years from now, they're going to be even larger because the startups are going to rely on their infrastructure to actually operate.
Yeah, that's actually really insightful, Alex. And another perspective about this that I hadn't thought of is that the acquisition of companies now is going to be not necessarily based on balance sheets and activity and profit margins. It's going to be based on, am I buying their data set? Do I want that data set? Is it going to help my existing business? So, and not differently than, other strategic acquisitions where you're acquiring a client or a certain vertical or a sector, now you're acquiring data sets. Yeah. So a company could be fledgling, but have the right data set that you don't have and need that could become a target for acquisition. So fascinating in the M&A space.
Well, I want to dive into AI in the user experience space as well, and just kind of the role that it can play in personalization and developing new technologies. Alex, why don't you kick us off kind of digging into how you see, like in the app development space, AI creating more personalized experience?
Ooh, that's such a good one. So from our perspective, we are now able to seamlessly blend conversational and user interface experiences. So up until mostly this year, right, conversational experiences were limited to chatbots, which had to be pre-programmed and pre-created. And then the user interface kind of reigned supreme. But over the last 3 to 5 years, specifically mobile applications, and I'll talk about AR in just a second, but have been becoming increasingly more complex. Right. And so at some point, like, these applications were so overloaded that people just stopped using them because it's just like, well, I don't even know how to get to the settings. It's like, well, you click one button and two buttons and three buttons. I think with conversational experiences or conversational AI now, you could still have the user interface, but you could blend it with a conversation. So we just launched an application for one of our partners, and it's a conference app. So what we've done with them is essentially created a conversational experience for searching speakers based on your profile, searching events based on your profile, and connecting with people based on your profile. So it's super conversational, right? So you walk in, you set up your profile, and you basically prompt the AI, and you're like, hey, I'm Alex or whatever, right? What track should I go to? And it basically builds a customized event guide for you. And then you're like, oh, who should I connect with? And it's like, well, based on your profile, you might be interested in connecting with X, Y, and Z. And that kind of experience was borderline impossible. Whether it's right or wrong, like, we'll figure that out during testing. Then the second piece is the UI, right? Now you have the UI to support it, and you could actually go to the schedule, which is relatively structured. So I think that type of personalization is awesome for me to see. That's just one example.
You ready for me to take this off the rails?
Yeah,
Alex. Let's blend this in with Love is Blind. When do we get to a point where we get a season where it's AI based, where rather than going into a room and asking, talking to somebody in a blind fashion, AI just tells me who is my perfect match, and we're gonna go get married? When is that reality show coming out?
I think it already happened. Wasn't that not Are You the
90 Day Fiance?
No, I think it was called Are You the One on MTV, and they paired like a computer like picked.
MTV still exists?
Yes, it still exists. And they like paired people up, and then they like the people had to try and figure out who their perfect match was. And if everybody figured it out by the end, they all won money. Huh. The computer told them. They didn't know, but the computer picked your perfect match.
Interesting. There's another Netflix show called The One, where it envisions a reality where everybody has a DNA match, and there's a company that owns this technology that can match you. And so you send in your hair sample, and if your one has also sent in their DNA sample, it will tell you, hey, your one is Lauren in Richmond, whoever. Anyway, like I said, Alex, let's get back on point here. Stop
I thought you were gonna blow, yeah.
Don't take this off the rails. Come on
Alex.
That's my job.
Alex, do better. Speaking of doing better, how about WrestleMania, huh?
Wait, we haven't even finished the user experience and
okay,
AI.
Okay,
WrestleMania is a whole new thing. We'll talk. You want to go into WrestleMania?
Maybe next time.
Oh, my gosh.
And what you gonna do?
Here's the coolest thing that I think I can't wait to experience. We've been playing with augmented reality glasses and headsets for almost 4 years. And by playing, I mean like actually like building functional experiences for clients. But they were always limited by the user interface, right? Okay. Like you had to like click things with your fingers and like.
Are we going Vision Pro here? Is that?
We could go Vision Pro.
Okay. Do we need to get a couple and come in and do a pod?
I mean, I think Claire's going to buy them, but yeah.
So, thanks, Claire. Awesome.
Really generous.
Best producer ever.
No, so I think.
Claire Bear.
I think just this conversational experience. Like, I mean, I don't foresee people basically talking to thin air for any time soon. But it's just having AI be responsive to your needs, actually like picking up on eye tracking, for example, like that's AI. Being able to have a conversation with something as you're picking up a product, like that's AI. Identifying a product in the store, that's AI. Vuzix just came out with, Vuzix is a glass manufacturer, eyeglass manufacturer. They just came out with a pair of sunglasses. They don't get the recognition that the Meta glasses get with Ray-Ban. But if you ever look at Vuzix, I think they just got bought by Walmart. These glasses look like the glasses I'm wearing, look like the glasses anybody would wear. And they help people essentially pick, pack, and produce products. And they are now connected with the Walmart infrastructure, which all this stuff is so, so cool.
Yeah, I think you're right. When you talk about wearables, when you get away from what we're used to wearing and the styles and just the human, I don't know, the human element to it, then you lose people. But if you get back to what we're used to and you put tech into things we're already comfortable with, whether it's a normal watch or glasses that you're used to, then we're all in.
Yeah, and I think like the last thing I'll kind of finish with, and again, this is kind of like that blend of UI and AI. Jen and the team at Hiyo, 3 or 4 years ago when they spoke with clients, they're like, we don't have an app. And clients are like, what do you mean you don't have an app? It wasn't 3 or 4 years ago, it was 2 years ago. And clients are like, you can't do tech without an app. And so like Jen would sit in the call or I'd hear some of these conversations and she's like, yeah, you just need a conversational experience. Like text your thermostat or text. And like people would be like, there's no way you can do that. And then all of a sudden ChatGPT came out and people like connect the dots. And now people are coming to Jen and they're like, hey, we don't need an app. We just need a conversational experience. And Jen's like, you see her kind of roll her eyes. She doesn't do this because she's
very professional. Yeah.
But I just picture Jen rolling her eyes.
Yeah, she's an adult. Yes. Unlike some other people
in this room. But it's really cool, right? Because like now you're interacting with the device on your wall. Now you're interacting with essentially property management. Now you're interacting with essentially a problem through a conversational interface. And when needed, the UI pops up. And it just makes things a lot cleaner.
It's there when you need it to be.
Yeah.
And
which is what it was
availability is the best capability.
The last thing I want to touch on before we wrap up.
WrestleMania?
We can.
Ooh.
Do you want to do WrestleMania?
Can you smell?
How about we just kind of like prep the audience?
Brother, I was in the gym with its 24-inch pipe.
Take a good look, Razor Ramon, for what you see across the back of this macho man.
Relaxed. You know what I'm talking about, brother? All my Hulkamaniacs out there.
I'm feeling very out of my depth with WrestleMania for what it's worth.
Nick is bringing it back to his like high school days, middle school days?
Both. All of the above, middle school, high school. Yeah.
Last
week.
Alex, talk us through what WrestleMania just announced, released, did.
They basically brought in user engagement to the next level. So they essentially brought people into the stadium. They still allowed them to be spectators while engaging them through augmented reality and other types of experiences in ways that we just haven't seen. So I think in the past it was either or, this time it was both. And I can't wait to talk more about that.
Yep, let's do that next time on Tech by Design.
Welcome to the big time, cause we're already here and we ain't going nowhere. Do you dig what I'm saying? Ooh, yeah. Yeah.